Hello, welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. This is the podcast in which me and a pal of mine chat about the movies or films that we'd forgot we'd even seen in the first place. The pal in question is the old leaky bucket brain, Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello there, all right?
Yeah, how's it going?
Oh, I'm leaking today.
Yeah, just from the brain or elsewhere?
Well, occasionally I'm leaking from other orifices as well.
Abandon that bit. Sometimes I like to let you run. Mm. I don't want to let that run.
Well, letting myself run is the main problem here. Now, if you'll hear me out.
Okay. Now, this episode, I'm going to pull back the magician's curtain. And yes, we are magicians. I don't know. Eagle-eyed listeners, they might have heard a certain film title dropped in at the end of various of our episodes where we were trying to catch out the other one for a movie the other one forgot they'd forgot. And said film, finally, well, it popped up on a free, well, not free, what would you call Amazon Prime?
it's a paid subscription service, but once you've paid, it's free, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It feels free.
It feels free. It achieves the feeling of free. Capitalism.
It's Hail Caesar. Mm-hmm. It's 2016's Hail Caesar! Exclamation mark.
Yeah.
Directed by the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan. I very much enjoyed watching this. And let us feed in to now me reading the letterboxed. Lights, camera, abduction. When a Hollywood star mysteriously disappears in the middle of filming, the studio sends their fixer to get him back. That is
what it is.
And that is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
That's the plot of the film.
That is the plot of the film.
For the last run of films we've been talking about, I've rarely wanted to talk about the film. Let's talk about this film, because I did really enjoy watching this.
Do you think this is a good one for, like, if people are listening now and they've listened to the last few and it's been 20 minutes on the movie and mostly other stuff, is this a good time to say maybe you should watch this one if you haven't?
I don't think we're going to go into too much detail. I don't think you need, I mean, yeah, maybe do pause it and watch it. I think you could listen to the chat and then you'll feel so embiggened and emboldened that you'll want to watch it afterwards.
Yeah. You'll feel enlarged and engrossed.
Yeah.
And engorged. Will you feel engorged?
I don't think about engorged.
Ralph Fiennes is in the movie.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
I certainly went into this with very high expectations back in 2016.
It was one of the big build movies of that year, I recall.
You know, it's kind of got an all-star cast, mm-hmm. which I know you want to chat about cameo-wise. It felt like this should have been a slam dunk, and it came out, and it just didn't quite land. And I think I wanted something else then.
Yeah.
And then now, me, knowing that I was disappointed and being, what am I now, nearly 10 years older?
Yeah.
It's only, oh fuck, I haven't even said how long it is. It's a wonderfully brief 106 mins. It stars Josh Brolin. He's your protagonist.
Yeah.
George Pruny is very much a kind of a second star, but he only really pops up in a couple of scenes. Alden Ehrenreich. Mm-hmm. That's how you say his name.
Okay.
And I Googled that. After this, he went on to be Han Solo. Ralph Fiennes, Scarlett Johansson.
Can I ask a question before you move on? When you Googled the pronunciation for Alden Ehrenreich, was it an American doing the pronunciation?
No, the first thing I clicked on was one of those little Hollywood interviews with Alden doing it.
And he is an American.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just an accent thing. I think the EA thing in the Ehrenreich is just how Americans would say er at the beginning, you know?
You could probably say Ehrenreich would be fine. Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph Fiennes.
I like to call him Ralph.
He's Rafe. Asked to be called Rafe.
He is, well, personally to me.
Well, yeah, in the sense that he's personally asked everyone.
Everyone, every time.
Don't call disrespect him. Ralph Fiennes. I will not have Voldemort being misnamed here on this podcast.
Fine. I'll renege on calling him Ralph anymore. Rafe, Scarlett Johansson, she is in two scenes.
Yep.
Channing Tatum.
Yep.
Jonah Hill, again, one scene.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand, a couple. It's a very
Tilda
Coen's...
Swinton may be the only other mention in numerous scenes, perhaps.
Good shout. I skipped over her. Yeah, she plays two roles, identical twins, in a lovely little bit. What did you enjoy about Hail Caesar?
Well, that's a good question, because I think it's a very good film in all sorts of different ways, some of which you've alluded to already. But for some reason, it's also not a very good film. And I tried to think about why that was. I think that's perhaps because I don't care what happens. The stakes are pretty low, because any outcome of the plot would basically be fine, according to me. You know, there's a moment during the end where someone drops something important into the ocean. And the joke of that doesn't really pay off. That's been an important thing for the last hour. And the joke really doesn't pay off, because I don't care about the thing. And I don't think anyone watching really does. So what the film is to me is a collection of very well-written and enjoyable, well-performed scenes. Lots of funny little bits that I don't necessarily laugh out loud at, but I go, oh, that's funny. That's a funny thing. With very low stakes. And I think it's one of those films where if I stop it halfway through for some, you know, reason unrelated to the film, I'm not desperate to continue, because there's sort of nothing, there's no hook for me. There's no reason to want to find out what happens, because really it doesn't matter what happens, you know?
Yeah, that's a real bullseye. My only caveat to that is I think there are three big proper laugh out loud moments in this. Josh Brolin plays a fixer, a Hollywood... I fucking know. I read out the letterbox. It doesn't even say when it was set. Which is quite important. It's set in the 1950s in Hollywood.
Yes.
It's very much a love letter to the Hollywood films of that era. And Josh Brolin plays a fixer, producer.
He's kind of like an executive hands-on producer. I mean, he's sort of head of the studio. He seems to directly report to the owner, doesn't he?
Yeah, so it's kind of heightened in that regard. And the key story is that his studio are making a Jesus Christ film.
Yeah.
And it's called The Christ.
Right.
Or Jesus the Christ.
I thought it was called Hail Caesar.
Oh, fuck. You're right. The film they're making is called Hail Caesar.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
What is your favourite Coen Brothers movie?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to talk about it at length, because we've spoken about it a fair amount recently, but I love No Country for Old Men.
Oh, so is that your fave?
Yeah, and beyond that, I'm really not that big a fan of the Coen Brothers. Like, I enjoyed Hail Caesar a lot the first time I watched it. I really enjoyed watching... it's not
pause.
Raising Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Pause. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a list, Joe.
Well, no, but I've got a list for you. That's what I was going to introduce. Like, but it's a specific list, Adam. So I thought, instead of me rattling through, what could be quite fun would be to play a little game with you, Adam, where I ask you, not if you can remember the films, because I know you know them, but if you can guess the order in which they appear on the Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter, a.k.a. the kind of, you know... the, what do they call it when it's a bunch of things all together?
Aggregator.
The aggregator of the tomato meter, the professional reviews, which ones professionally reviewed the best down to the worst. Now, there's a number of films on here, so I'm just going to start by asking you if you can guess what the top tomato movie is on the tomato meter of the Coen brothers, directed by both.
Two caveats. I do not recognise tomatoes.
Okay. Yeah.
I reject aggregators, tomatoes.
Is it that you don't like fruit that is masquerading as a vegetable?
That is fundamentally it.
Right.
No, seriously though.
Oh, yeah.
I despise Rotten Tomatoes.
Of course. You don't respect anyone's opinion.
No, I don't. No. I do respect people's opinion. I don't like this aggregator as proof of a film's freshness,
right?
And the idea of anything like this is the top of. Come on,
it's so rare that you ever say proof without saying if proof be need be. You were always saying if proof be need be, but you did. So I was waiting for it to hit. Like it's like a, you know, Pavlov's dog. Like you'd rang a little bell, and my mouth was salivating. I was saying he's going to say if proof be need be. He's going to say if proof be need be. But you didn't. You just left the proof hanging there. Can you say it now so that I can get out of this psychological snap I'm in?
No, because I've done the day to day thing. I've done that day to day reference too many times.
If proof be need be,
and I'm not doing it anymore.
Okay,
it's like some of us do a reference maybe a few too many times. Some of us might mention Frodo or Sam, and they will keep doing that. And that's fine. Other of us might make a kind of a reference. And then after they've heard themselves back a number of times making the same reference again and again and again, might think, all right, stop.
Whereas others of us simply gaze into the mirror as though we are Dorian Gray.
Yeah, that's a reference.
Bathing in the joy of our Lord of the Rings references. Listen, I left Lord of the Rings behind. I haven't. But I did make a Harry Potter reference before, and I'm fine with that as well. But can you guess what's top rated on the very important and definitely scientifically accurate Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter? Of the Coen. Oh, second caveat. Second, I'm so sorry. Caveat. Yeah. No, go ahead.
Now, I just want to be clear. Okay, with these lists,
I think it's important that you are clear.
The Coen brothers. Now, in the early days, they had to split the credit. One of them was down as director, and one of them was down as producer. But they always both directed them.
Why did they have to do that?
It's a weird thing with the Directors Guild and the Writers Guild about who gets credit, the specifics of it are too boring, and I can't really rattle it off now. But I know that it was due to that, and so they always split it. And it at a certain point, I don't know which film it was.
Yeah,
some nerd will know. They got the dispensation to finally get the co-director credit.
Fine, that was the caveat. That was the second caveat. Great stuff. What do you want to guess where Lady Killers appears on this long list?
Bottom.
It is bottom.
Great.
It's the only one to have the little splat image, a rotten image, as opposed to a tomato. 54%.
Okay, so not terrible.
That's number 20. That's number 20. Okay, so we're starting at the top, though. What do you think is the number one rated Coen Brothers movie on Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter?
Okay, so I'm going to say top is Fargo.
It's joint first. Fargo's joint first according to the percentages.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's do that then.
Yeah, so what's the other film?
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
No. Oh Brother, Ooh. Where Art Thou is kind of
Don't say fuck off.
In 16th. Of 20,
really?
With a 78%. Yeah, I don't like that film. I don't understand why.
This is where I've confused popular opinion. That film was so widely adored by the public. I confused that with critical acclaim. That's we're doing Oh Brother, man. We're doing Oh Brother.
Oh God. Yeah. Okay. Not next week, but it's fine. We'll do it at some point. But yeah, that's 16 out of 20. So that's definitely not the other first film.
Okay, then the other flick.
I might help you by saying I really feel like you're not going to guess it. I would not have predicted this.
Okay, Raising Arizona?
No, Raising Arizona
Don't tell me where it is.
Why? Well, you're not. We're not going to guess all the exact number of all 20. With the game is going to become you failing to get number one, and then me telling you where all the others are.
Okay, fine.
Raising What's Arizona is in at number 8 with a 91% rating, so still very high, but number 8.
Okay, what's the co-number one then?
You want me to tell you?
I'm just going to ruin... Do you want me to guess one more?
Yeah, guess some more. This is more fun now, I've realised.
A Serious Man.
No, I'm sorry again. A Serious Man is coming in all the way down at number 11 with an 89%.
You've skewed this by telling me I won't get it.
Well, I mean, you haven't got it, though. I've predicted the future in that sense, haven't I? What's next? Pick another one. There's a chance we could get through all 20 before you get it. I mean, there isn't any chance of that. There's a chance we could get through 19.
Barton Fink.
No, I'm sorry about that. Barton Fink is all the way down in number 9.
Miller's Crossing.
Miller's Crossing is number 5 with a 93% rating.
No Country for Old Men.
That's number 4 with a 93% rating also.
Blood Simple.
Blood Simple is number 2 with a 94% rating.
Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski, no. Big Lebowski is all the way down in 14 with an 80% rating.
This list is all over the place and wrong. I think
it must be the professional ratings of the time.
The Man Who Wasn't There.
The Man Who Wasn't There is in number 13 with an 81% rating. Oh, this has worked out much better than I could ever have hoped for. Are you going to ask me if it's Burn After Reading?
Yeah.
Well, it's not Burn After Reading. Burn After Reading is all the way down in 15th with a 78% rating.
As well it should.
As well it should be, yeah. Let's be honest.
True Grit.
It's True Grit, Adam.
That is absolutely insane.
Well, it's a joint number one with Fargo, 95%. Critics consensus, girded by strong performances from Jeff Bridges, Matt Damon and newcomer Hayley Steinfeld, and lifted by some of the Coens' most finely tuned, unaffected work, True Grit is a worthy companion to the Charles Portis book.
It is the most forgettable, forgotten film, Coen Brothers film.
I forgot it was even a Coen Brothers film. I've never actually seen it.
Well, unfortunately, we can't do it.
No. We've had a bit of a fun game there, but I think you should tell us about some of the Coen Brothers runs, because that perhaps hasn't captured the image of it. There sounds like there was a bit of a lower ebb there in the 2000s, but they've certainly been on some runs in their time, haven't they?
They have had they've got one of the strongest filmographies there is, all right? They've got some duds, but they begin with Blood Simple, which is great. Raising Arizona, people like Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino are always banging on about that film. It's heightened, funny. Nick Cage is great. Miller's Crossing, that is one of my favourite films of all time. If that's not on your list, if you've not seen that, you've got to see it. Gabriel Byrne has never been better. The script is phenomenal. It looks gorgeous. Albert Finney, fucking forget about it. There's just nothing that comes close to that film. Barton Fink, there's a great Simpsons gag where Bart and his pals get to, I think they play hooky for the day off. And they, his friends do. And he can't go and play with them. And Milhouse says, we're going to go and see an R-rated movie. And Bart can't go along, and they start chanting the name of the movie they're going to see. They start saying, Barton Fink, Barton Fink. And the joke is, they've gone to see this obscure, weird, intense Coen Brothers movie. That's how part of the culture the Coens were.
Yeah. And that was 1991, Barton Fink.
It's a very odd film, but if you watch it, and you get it, it's good. When I first saw that, I was too young. I think it was in my late teens, and I was told the Coens were great, and it went over my head.
Well, I've never seen it. A renowned New York playwright is enticed to California to write for the movies and discovers the hellish truth of Hollywood.
It's just a heightened, intense, funny, dark little story about a guy. It's almost, to quote Jesse Pinkman, Kafkaesque.
Right.
John Turturro stuck in this horrible little hotel room tasked, he's a playwright and he's tasked with writing a wrestling picture. And it's just really silly and funny, but also really dark. I think they wrote it. Oh, yeah. The reason they wrote it is because they were writing Miller's Crossing and they couldn't figure out the plot and they got totally stuck. And then they just boshed out Barton Fink.
Right.
And it's got, it's the next film that follows that is Hudsucker Proxy. And they go really well together. Hudsucker Proxy is almost like the light, the light version of Barton Fink. They've both got the same sort of heightened patter.
A naive business graduate is installed as president of a manufacturing company as part of a stock scam.
Yeah, none of these letterboxed do the films a disservice. That Hudsucker Proxy was a big budget film and it flopped big style.
Right.
People didn't get it and it stands up very well as a result. It looks fantastic and heightened and great.
But they're about to back-to-back bang, right? 1996, 1998.
But I mean, they haven't even dropped the ball yet, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure,
they've dropped the ball box office wise. But then following that, you've got Fargo, The Big Lebowski, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, and The Man Who Wasn't There.
Sure,
which is, I mean, oh. Come on. You don't like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
No.
We're going to rewatch it. Intolerable Cruelty was deemed... That's got Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones. That was deemed quite soft.
Right.
And kind of felt quite... I think it was the first time that they were right... I think it was based on someone else's script, so it wasn't original Coen's.
Miles, a high-profile divorce lawyer, wins a case for his rich but adulterous client, Rex Rexroth. But Rex's ex-wife, Marilyn, who is no saint and is a gold digger, plots to take revenge on Miles.
Yeah, it's silly and it harks back to the sort of silly humour of Hudsucker. I should revisit it. And then after that, oh yeah, then you've got Lady Killers, which is the real stinker. That's a remake of a classic Ealing film with Tom Hanks, and that was so derided.
Right. 2004, an eccentric if not charming southern professor and his crew pose as a classical ensemble in order to rob a casino, all under the nose of his unsuspecting but sharp old landlady.
Yeah, it's just a weird... It's the one big misfire. Skip over it. And then you've got
Is
No
it the
Country.
Only one where they combined with Hanks? Tom Hanks is in that movie. Because they've got their favourites, haven't they? Like, they've, you know, George Clooney's been in a few. Jeff Bridges has obviously been in a few. Who's the other guy who's stars alongside Jeff Bridges?
Turturro.
John Goodman, Turturro. And I'm sure there are others. Oh, of course.
Frances McDormand.
Well, she's Frances McDormand. Loads. Yeah. But the lead from this movie, what's his name? Josh Brolin has been in a couple as well. But it appears that they worked with Tom Hanks just the once here.
Yeah, I mean, Hanks is poison. Fuck him.
Can I ask you a question about the Coens?
Yeah.
It's in the form of an anecdote, though.
Oh, fuck me, yeah. Oh, because after Llewyn Davis, we're on Hail Caesar, and we can abandon the game.
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, I was with Uncle Damien the other day. Uncle Damien from the Old Red Lion Theatre Pub in Angel Islington, which is in London, by the way, for our overseas listeners. Now, or indeed for our listeners that are outside of London, but in the UK, some of them don't know, do they? They don't know about the centre of the country where all the important things happen.
Is Uncle Damien the kind of man who walks around with a bag or without a bag?
That is an excellent question. And do you know, it changes depending on the context. But I would say more often than not, without a bag, yeah? He's got all the stuff in his pockets. He's well prepared. He doesn't need a bag. He's the kind of man that says, if I had to bring a bag, that would suggest that I couldn't carry everything on my person. Do you know what I'm saying?
And
he doesn't have a bag.
No, because also...
But sometimes he has a bag.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about.
This is a category that you introduced, the man without a bag category.
Well, he's between London and his because he runs this pub, but he also lives outside of London. So he has a car. And sometimes I think, what is a car except other than a bag, really, that can also get you where you're going? Because if you simply needed to get where you were going, you would have a motorbike or a very small car that only had one seat in it. But you don't. you have a car with a boot and with a glove compartment and with all under seating storage, and because it's basically just a bag that you drive around in. That's what a car is. Now, listen, I was with Uncle Damien the other day. He didn't have a bag, but he had a car. And he was talking about the old Red Lion Theatre Pub, something that had been performed in the theatre a few years ago. And that was, I don't know if you know this or not, but the old Red Lion was the world premiere, this little theatre pub, for Arthur Miller's first ever stage play, which had never been performed before. He wrote it in 1936 when he was at university in Michigan. And he wrote it for a playwright competition where he won, I don't know, £25 or whatever people won in 1936. But he really didn't like it and he never wanted it to be performed. But he's dead now, and so people get to do whatever they want.
Movies You Forgot podcast is brought to you by the Old Red Lion Theatre Pub in Angel, London, bringing you the finest of upcoming theatre performances from all of your favourites that you've never even heard of.
Exactly. No, that is true. But also some of the shittest things I've ever seen. And that's the true wonder about fringe theatre, off West End theatre. You should just go, because I would say 25% of the time you're going to be unmoved and bored, right? But that's quite low. That's quite a low percentage, given how often, you know, you go to the cinema and see a film that you don't really love. But for the rest of the time, you're either going to see something brilliant, which will move you, or you're going to see something just atrocious, which will move you in completely different ways, but will give you something to think about for the rest of your life. Now, anyway, Arthur Miller's first ever stage play, it's called No Villain, and it had its world premiere, as I say, at the Old Red Lion Theatre in Angel, Islington, London. But it was interesting talking to Uncle Damien about this, and the reason I bring this up in this episode is because he said when he watched the play when it was first performed, what he noticed about it was that it had elements of all of Arthur Miller's later very famous and performed elsewhere other than the Old Red Lion Theatre plays. So he saw elements of The Crucible in it. He saw The Death of a Salesman in it. He saw, you know, other of Arthur Miller's plays that I can't recall.
Stella! Yeah, that's a little joke, because I know he didn't write that
right,
play.
Right, okay.
That was just a little bit of fun.
No, that was nice.
For the theatre.
Well done.
Is this a dagger I see before me?
But because the film, because the play,
always be closing, always be closing. That's not even in the Glengarry Glen Ross. That's another little deep joke.
That's right.
A little deep cut. I'm quoting Glengarry Glen Ross,
right,
but the movie and not the play. Yeah?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all good stuff.
That's good stuff, man, yeah. But the point is, because it wasn't released until afterwards, and because I guess Arthur Miller thought it would never be performed, he took elements from here to extrapolate and make all of these other plays that were very, very famous afterwards. And I wonder if when we were talking through the Coen brothers' filmography there, you see, not necessarily just themes, but I wonder, I'm sure there are ideas that percolate in earlier films, little side characters, little subplots, that those guys, they're brilliant minds, they go, oh, that's something to extrapolate on for later. Do you know, I'm sure that happens with people's careers, and I haven't paid close enough attention to the Coens to really know what those would be, but I'm certain that there will be films that they've released later that have been true realizations of, at the very least, an idea that they tried to express in a smaller form in an earlier film. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm sure that might be a thing. I'll leave everyone to judge you on that thought.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. What are the Coen brothers? If you had to describe them, their films, in like one sentence, and why they're different to other films, or what links them together, what would it be?
I think it wouldn't even be a sentence. I would just say a deconstruction.
Right.
And then I'd dust my hands off.
Yeah.
And I'd...
Much like Jacques Derrida.
Yeah, and then I'd go, and if you don't understand that, well, you know, you're a thicko. Yeah, they're not... I was going to say I hate the word postmodern because I don't really get what... It feels so overused as to be meaningless. At this point now, postmodernism is... Now it's like postmodernism when I was around was the thing, and now it's in the past. So what everyone's talking about now, postmodernism isn't even new.
Well, I'm not sure that we've moved beyond postmodernism, have we? That's one of the.
It's an aching chasm of which everything falls into. So yeah, fair enough.
Well, and it's worth saying as well that, you know, postmodernism is literally the description of art and critical theory in a time post-modernism, which is not the modern time. It is a description of an approach to literary criticism and the creation of art at a specific period in history. I think people often misunderstand it and think that it's something like, you know, the end of history. It's like a bit like that. It's like what comes after what's happening now in the modern. But it really is just like a specific reference to a specific time, and deconstruction, the word you use, is the key tenet of postmodernism anyway, the desire to deconstruct what has come in the period before, which was the period of modernism. So in that sense, the Coen brothers are kind of perfect because, you know, they take a character and invert your expectations, a bit like we talked about with the Oscar Isaac's Bob Dylan movie, a bit like, you know, you see in this film, your expectation of what the communists are going to do to George Clooney, or how George Clooney is going to react to that, or what Channing Tatum is going to do, or how people are going to react to certain things, are all inverted and deconstructed in theory in order to be able to like have a laugh or better understand a character from a different perspective, right? So that's why people think of postmodernism as like not necessarily having stakes. And in that sense, Hail Caesar's kind of like the perfect canon postmodern film because it really inverts everything so much that it's essentially meaningless.
They're such phenomenal filmmakers that they are timeless. Fargo is timeless. No Country is timeless. Miller's Crossing, timeless. And Hail Caesar, that's what's interesting about it, is it's very entertaining, and it's almost like they've just slightly tipped it too far, and that there is sadly no heart to that film. And the reason there's no heart to it is because there's a voiceover by a character you never even see, voiced by Michael Gambon. And you're listening to that and you're thinking, who is this guy? Who's telling this story? I don't know. 2016, Hail Caesar, that's the last kind of good film they make.
Well, in many ways, like No Country for Old Men is the perfect kind of counterbalance, or like the perfect kind of a film to analyse alongside Hail Caesar, because No Country for Old Men, as we've discussed in previous episodes, is about nothing. It's about how all of this stuff happens, but nothing means anything. And it's about characters coming to grips with that in very different ways. Some of them dying as a result of it. Some of them, you know, living to the end of the film, but reflecting on it and realizing that nothing that they did changed anything. But it's beautifully drawn. And the stakes are very real. They're life and death in this film. And I'm gripped to the end, despite the fact that the theme is nothing. Whereas Hail Caesar is in theory about something, but it's made with nothing. Right? It's in a way, they're examining the same kind of idea. You sort of get an idea of who these people are and what they're interested in. But there are no stakes. And in this time, it's the nothing that is the shroud around the film. The stuff within the film is fun and something and interesting and little sequences. But it's the nothing is around it instead of what it's about. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think you've absolutely landed a wonderful point there. I think it's all about the point of view of the character. And so with No Country for Old Men, the point of view of the various characters that you as a viewer latch onto, Josh Brolin and his wife, played by Kelly MacDonald in particular, they're so human and relatable mm-hmm. that even when bad things happen to them, you really feel it. And then with Hail Caesar, it's about Hollywood. It's just not going to have the same relatability or the same stakes. You're ultimately not going to care. Who cares if these Hollywood fuckers make this film or not? And if it's satirical of Hollywood, that's fun, but it's very low-hanging fruit. Okay, we've got comedic Pitt and comedic Clooney
uh-huh.
with the Coens, okay? Comedic Pitt turns up in Burn After Reading.
That's right.
And we've got comedic Clooney in not just Hail Caesar. He's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Sure.
And he is also Intolerable Cruelty, of which you do not know.
I feel like you're stacking the deck already a little bit. Not just.
Before you think about it,
yeah.
Don't think about it. Okay. This is not a winning game.
I'm not thinking about it.
Do you know what? You can't actually win this game.
Right.
Who do you prefer or rate or think is better as a comedic actor across the span of their career?
George Clooney.
George Clooney or Brad Pitt?
George Clooney.
Great. You've already said George Clooney.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
Is that the end of the bit?
No. Why do you say that quickly?
Because he's funnier.
He's funnier. Like that. Because we had this conversation
you like that,
where
do
we...
You? He's funnier. You like that, do you?
You like that, do you? You like when they're funnier. Yeah, you like that to make when they make jokes. Because we had the big conversation about who was better.
Yeah.
Clooney or Pitt, and
we did.
You said Pitt, and everyone tweeted you and said Pitt.
Yeah.
Anyone who thinks Clooney's better is a fucking cunt.
It is Pitt still, just to be clear.
No.
Well,
don't. That's not the different. A different debate.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Just who's funnier? Who's got the better, broader comedic chops in their career? It's Clooney. Yeah, it's Clooney.
Clooney's got better comedic chops.
Yeah. His chops are funnier chops.
Tell me, give me a flavour of just some of the chops and tell me why.
Okay, fine. Well, Hail Caesar's a perfect example here because his character is, a very, very famous movie star who has all of the airs and graces of someone who's had lots of decisions made for them for a long time, right? He wakes up from being unconscious in an unfamiliar house and he simply walks out of the door and just stares directly in the face of a cleaner who's hoovering, right? There's no fear. He's not afraid of where he is. He's like a dog that has been raised pedigree, you know, birthed in a wonderful home, only ever had good experiences with humans. And then it walks into a market that sells dog meat and it just looks around and just walks up to people. Like there's nothing, you know, it's never learned to fear anything.
Do you think Pitt can play that scene?
Pitt tries to play that scene in Burn After Reading, obviously a much more exaggerated example of it, but essentially the thing those two characters have in common is that they display as one thing, but they're sort of deeply stupid underneath it. They're both morons at the same time as not being completely moronic, and there's a very delicate subtlety involved in that, which Clooney does brilliantly in Hail Caesar, and you really get a range of it. And which Pitt does in a very funny way in Burn After Reading, but where you don't get the same level of depth. Like Pitt's character in that is just more of a straight up moron than Clooney is. Whereas Clooney, there are many layers to the way in which George Clooney's character in this film is moronic.
Oh, heavens to Betsy! Pitt, you've nailed it. Pitt can really do a straight up moron.
Sure.
There's these fantastic moments in Fight Club where he's in the background as Tyler Durden doing nunchucker stuff.
Yeah.
And is a fucking buffoon.
They're very funny.
Very funny. The idea that I'm saying, and I'm not saying, how dare you, that Pitt can't be funny, is a nonsense. I'm saying Fight Club, he flexes a comedic muscle. Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's toying with humour.
He is toying with humour.
Snatch. He's playing an offensive stereotype.
Sure.
He knows how to get a laugh. He also, you know, in the likes of Bullet Train and The Mexican, knows how not to get a laugh.
Right, yeah. He's done it all.
Whereas Clooney, look at Clooney's filmography. Whenever he's trying to get a laugh, 100% hit rate.
Who'd you rather go for a drink with, though? Pitt or Clooney? Because you know with Clooney, it's going to be that coffee, Nescafe or whatever it is that he does the adverts for.
Don't be
for,
a dickhead.
Know? And with Pitt, it's going to be something cool, like a Red Bull.
No.
Wait.
I'd really love to play the box office game, and I genuinely don't know how you approach this, because it's 2016, as discussed. It's a late Coen brothers, okay? They're a big deal. They're a big deal people. It's an ensemble cast. It has all the trappings of a film that people will go to the cinema to watch. So how do you approach trying to guess the brackets estimated budget for Hail Caesar?
This film does not make money. On paper, this isn't bums on seats territory, but foolishly.
Are you saying foolishlessly?
Foolishly.
With fool or without fool?
With fools.
Oh, foolishly.
Foolishly.
Right.
There we go. That is the word.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've had a few cans.
I thought you were saying foolishlessly, which I was like, I've never heard of that before. Or don't call me Leslie, I thought about saying, you know?
No, they've just given them too much money. And it won't make its money back, and it'll be deemed a failure. So they've snuck it through.
Uh-huh.
It's a big old picture.
It's a prestige picture. Although they say in the film that the film they're making is a prestige picture. So I wonder if that's confused you into thinking that this is a prestige picture.
No, it's not a prestige picture, but it's also, it's set in the past. You've got a hat budget.
Yeah, hat budget for sure. A lot of sound studios.
They've spent money. There's a cast. It looks good. They've had to recreate all kinds of stuff. So I feel like it's in the wheelhouse of $60 million.
Wow. Well, boy, are you going to be surprised, Adam, when I tell you that the estimated budget for Hail Caesar is $22 million.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a... It's all up on screen. I love it. I love it when it's all up on screen.
Yeah,
like
man,
that.
That's cheap. I was even thinking, forgetting about what the film looks like, I was even just thinking with the cast involved, you know, that's a cheapie.
That's because they all want to work with the fucking Coens.
Right, that's what you're getting through the door, you know? Well, at this degree now, do you still think it's a loss-making film? We're about to find out when you guess the opening weekend US and Canada. Now, let me tell you, it's a Feb 7th release. February 7th, 2016. How many bums on seats do you think they get? Bearing in mind that I remember it being very well advertised.
Yes, it was well advertised. It's got cast. It's got cameos that they can...
roll out in the trailer.
5 million?
It did 11.3 million.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's half of its budget estimated in the first weekend. Now, this is where things get interesting, though. Because, of course, the film is good. But it's not going to satisfy everyone.
It didn't satisfy me.
It didn't satisfy you.
I don't think it satisfied the critics either.
So does this play by those normal sort of guidelines that we've talked about before? I'm not sure that it will.
No, this is not a 10X. This is not a 10Xer because these kinds of films, they live and die on word of mouth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm the guy, I'm word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm mouth. Mouth. Wait, you're word and I'm mouth, right?
I'm word.
And I'm mouth, yeah?
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not giving you the word.
Well, no.
So you're not giving it the mouth.
Well, you're already in my mouth.
No, because you're not... I'm seeing it. Obviously, I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
You haven't even heard of them, the Coens.
Mm.
So you're not the guy, right? I'm...
You're the guy, which is why you're the word and I'm the mouth.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I say to you, ah... Joe, I've seen the new Coens. You've got to see it.
Yeah,
you might not understand necessarily what it's about, but it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you that word.
No. And well, then also because my mouth is closed, it sounds more like.
No, but I'm speaking. My mouth's not closed.
No, but I am the mouth.
No, but I'm giving you the word.
Right.
I'm the word and you're the mouth.
But if you're the word and you're giving me the word, then you have to have a mouth in order to give me the word, which makes you the word and the mouth and me just the passerby.
How can I express to you what the word is without... I've got a mouth.
That's what I was confused by as well. That's the premise. That's where I lost the premise.
No, the premise is the mouth is the person who speaks to everyone.
Oh.
I don't know anyone, right?
Right, but you know me and you're the word.
And I'm one above you.
Right.
And I whisper into your ear.
One above me.
What I'm saying is,
yeah,
you are with the gutter snipes.
Right, yeah.
But you know loads of them. And
me and all the gutter snipes, yeah.
You look up to, everyone looks up to you.
Yeah.
But you don't know what to think until the likes of me tell you.
So I look up to you.
Well, you're not even seeing it.
Right. No, I'm not seeing it.
Unless I tell you to.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Of course.
And then if I tell you to... You see it,
yeah.
And then you spread the word because
right.
You know loads of people
and
you're Billy Big Balls
Gutter Snipes.
With your big word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
That's right.
But I do not give you the nod. Yeah? I don't nod you or give you the word.
There's a nod now. I thought you needed a mouth. If you were just going to nod, you don't need a mouth.
I realised that. All I need to do is give you a nod.
Yeah.
It's not a word. It's not the word and the mouth.
No.
It's the nod and the mouth.
If it's not a 10Xer, then what do you think it is going to be gross worldwide? Remembering, of course, that it was 11.3 opening weekend and a $22 million budget.
It's doing fine. It's not going to get enough word of mouth, of which we've discussed, to tip it over.
Mm.
So the fact it's cost 20 million to make is nuts. They would have advertised it because it's got stars like the yin yang,
yeah.
So it needs to make more than 40. So let's say it makes 70.
It just under, but you are within the 10% here because it makes $63,945,000. So essentially $64 million.
Three times.
So yeah, so there you go. That's pretty good, huh?
It's not. Shall we do the game where you say a film and the other one doesn't know if they've seen it or forgotten if they've seen it?
Please, I'd love to do that. Now, it's my go this week to read out films to you that you will say no to, but I'm going to try and get you. Okay, my first one's a great one, Adam, yeah? I've forgotten everything about this film. I'm hoping you will have done as well.
Plum me.
It's feasible that you didn't watch it, but I'm not sure. Let's find out. It is, of course, starring Rusty Crowe, Master and Commander.
Oh, never saw it.
You never saw. Oh, I did wonder that. Yeah, it fits kind of into that little. Have you said that before? Have you?
No, don't worry. I'll take the pitch.
Oh, okay,
you
fine. Know,
you've got to soak in when I say I haven't seen something.
Yeah,
but that's a. Yeah. Oh, it's. Stung me through, but no.
I might just watch that for fun then, for myself. I've got a Clooney on here, which I'm going to save because we've done a lot of Clooney today, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to get you with this Clooney at some point in the future. Right, what about this one then? Okay. I really want you to say yes to this one, which I realise as I'm saying it makes you more likely to say no.
I'm not like that.
It's on my list because I believe you've indicated before that maybe I might be able to get you with it. It's the film The Lives of Others. That sounds like the noise you make when I've got you.
I mean, you do.
I really want to watch it again.
I say this, I'm saying this because I really want to watch it again. I say this, I've got the screenplay on my bookshelf.
No way.
And I've read the screenplay more recently. I've only ever seen that film once at the cinema.
Okay, so a long time ago then. What was it, like 2005 or something? 2008, something like that.
A long time.
Yeah, yeah.
You love that movie.
I really like it. I think it's terrific. I've watched it maybe three times. It's not one that I watch every year, but I'm getting around to wanting to stick that movie
on. I thought you could say, I'm getting aroused just thinking about it. But the idea...
Now, if you're listening and you don't know what The Lives of Others is, and you have time before next week's episode, please watch it if you haven't seen it, because it's a terrific film. It's really, I think it, you know, there's a high probability, I would say, that when you watch it, you'll finish and you'll go, that was really, really good. So just do it.
So that was the Hail Caesar episode. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.